You're listening to CKMS News on CKMS 102.7 FM in Waterloo, Ontario. This program is a part of the Local Journalism Initiative Grant Program and is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the Government of Canada, and the CKMS Newsroom. You can access the recordings of the show on radiowaterloo.ca/news or on the National Local Journalism Initiative website, canada-info.ca. I'm your host, Shalaka Jadlev. In the last few months, infographics on the 2020 Indian farmers' protests have been circulating across social media, with little large-scale media coverage on the issue. These are in a series of ongoing protests against legislation passed by the Parliament of India, led by Prime Minister Modi, in September 2020, which does away with the mandi system, which sets a minimum set price. This minimum set price allows for a more predictable income for farmers, which is especially important when the impacts of climate change are already unraveling across the country. Not only are the bills being contested, but also the way they were pushed through, as there was no substantial consultation with the farmers or their unions. These acts of farmers and workers' resistance have been noted to be the largest protest in recorded history, with over 250 million farmers and workers across India going on strike against agriculture reform that leaves farmers at the mercy of corporations. Before this segment, I'll be in conversation with three community members. Asha Virdi, a graduate from the University of Waterloo's Faculty of Environment who has worked locally on farms. Sabine Kamisa, a PhD candidate at the University of Waterloo studying sociopolitical movements through digital ethnography. And Jody Koberniski, a member of the Waterloo Regional Food Systems Roundtable and a PhD candidate at the University of Waterloo studying commodification and how food commons are a mechanism to develop economic structures. Together, they will consider the importance of these farmer strikes globally and why we need to consider the parallels and relevance to Waterloo's regional food system. These considerations touch ecological concerns, the interconnectedness of our food systems, and ultimately why farmers' rights are everyone's rights. Before we dive into our conversation, I would love to hear a little bit from both of you, a bit of an introduction of yourselves and what brings you to speak on this today.
It's Asha here. I'm a graduate of UW. I've got about three seasons of farming experience in Ontario. I also am of Punjabi heritage, a first generation Canadian, and my family farmed in Punjab until their emigration in the 1980s. So I do have quite a connection to, you know, farming in general and also the specific situation in Punjab.
This is Sabine, and I guess first and foremost, my interest in this topic stems from my own dissertation research. I'm a PhD candidate in religious studies at the University of Waterloo, and my dissertation research is focused on Sikh activism in North America. And I guess my entry into the farmer protests in Punjab is through the lens of the Sikh Punjabi diaspora and through their social media. It's my main focus as a digital ethnographer. I've been to Punjab and become familiar with some of the farming concerns in the region and the state when I was there, and was really exposed to some of the complexities that are being raised now in these protests. And so both research interests, but also personal familiarity with the subject.
And for those who might not be familiar with the strikes, can you share a little bit about what's going on?
While the unrest has obviously been growing for a number of reasons, back in September, the Modi government announced a few laws that particularly pertain to farmers and their ability to obtain set prices for their harvests. So Modi is essentially proposing to move this from a public system to a privatized system in which the in his eyes, I suppose, the farmers would have more say in the prices that they obtain for their harvest, but they don't agree with this. So what has happened, I believe it's been going on for quite a few weeks now, they've been blocking highways into Delhi and peacefully protesting this issue.
Yeah, totally. I think you got it when talking about these bills, right? That Modi is wanting to implement, that have been in a discussion for quite a while amongst the Indian government. So being able to see how these three bills basically create, as you said, Asha, a privatized system that favors that really is like a neoliberal kind of agenda that favors corporate interests for managing who gets to produce what and whose products get sold in the bigger markets. And I think that's really like one of the big concerns here is that while Modi might frame these as helping farmers, it has the potential to really limit farmers, especially small farmers, their ability to decide what kind of products or what kind of crops they grow and the control over how much it costs and who they sell it to.
Exactly. Yeah. And control of land as well. There's inconsistencies. We see it time and time again in different agricultural systems when, you know, you put decisions like this in private and powerful hands and expect a marginalized group to have autonomy in that relationship. It's just not going to work out that way.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think it's really important to recognize that this history of farmers' rights in Punjab and in India has been a long time conflict. If we go back to the Green Revolution, we see something similar there where the government tries to step in to introduce, you know, technological advancements in the name of food security and access to clean water and things like that. But really, that actually made it harder for many small farmers in terms of keeping their land, really promoted cash crops, corporate investment, and homogenizing, you know, what farmers are able to actually grow, which really impacted the food supply for the broader population in Punjab. So, you know, this is not a new issue, even though the bills are new. It's been a long, long process.
You know, we see it in the protests now. You know, it's coming to a head, but so many of the issues that these families are experiencing have been ongoing for decades through generations. And, you know, when we look at farmer mental health, that has been, you know, a conversation again and again that we see in these areas.
I'd love to sort of dig into, you know, a piece around consultation and why it seems to be one of the key issues in the discussion that's at least covered by the Western media. And what does it signal on a broader scale about the labor movements?
So basically, the idea is that farmers in Punjab were not consulted, and unions that represent these farmers in Punjab were not consulted in the creation of these bills that are supposedly to protect their rights. And the focus of that in the Western context or in the diasporic politics or activism is that, you know, we have our own issues here in Canada regarding land sovereignty, and a focus on consultation is kind of how our government has tried to address that by reaching out and seeking that consultation. It's something that people on the ground here in Canada specifically have been asking for, is to be able to be part of the decision-making process. And we've had our own various different consultations. So I think that idea is really reflected in some of the responses that we're seeing to the farming protests here in North America.
You know, the consultation and the importance of a government consulting with its citizens before these decisions are put in place is that we see it in Canada, and it has been demanded, and it does occur to, you know, some extent. But even now, following weeks of protesting and, you know, blocking access to a major hub in India, we see the Modi government refusing to acknowledge or, you know, engage on the ground with these individuals. And it's really hard to see that despite the lack of consultation before, that even now, following all of this action, we're still not seeing any response.
One of the things to kind of keep in mind is the mental health of many of these farmers and the stress that they've already felt for generations and being, you know, in debt to landowners or these corporations that are already trying to buy them out in many ways. And Punjab has like the highest suicide rate of farmers in the world because they have to deal with these pressures, right? So the fact that the government hasn't invested in doing that consultation work, I think, is a reflection of their actual interests, their corporate interests.
Definitely. Yeah. India has not been a stranger to corporate interests. It really has come to a head, and it's not going to die down.
India is naturally experiencing the impacts of climate change quite adversely. And that does affect agriculture too. And it's a conversation that's happening very much in parallel around the world.
I mean, I think on one end, it's adding to the tension. It's adding to the urgency. We're only on a track to further degrade our ecological systems. And so I really think we're at this point where either we can keep our farms in the hands of those who know how to treat the land with respect, But if we lose this battle, I think we're really at a tipping point, especially for a part of India that produces so much of their food.
You know, the angle of climate change and environmental degradation, India is an interesting case study that way. For a long time, you know, the impacts of colonialism in the country or in the subcontinent of India, the idea of being able to not own their land to begin with, the fight for sovereignty is like been an ongoing battle. And I think, you know, if we're talking about farmers' rights and access to land, the challenge of if the government is allowing, you know, this much corporate involvement in the production system of food, really the result of that would be corporations dictating what kind of produce they want to make available to their consumers. And being able to restrict farmers and what they're able to grow produces highly specialist style farming rather than biodiverse farming. Once you start going that way with food production, you know, you're talking about farmers now not being able to grow food for their own community that is able to hit all of these different nutritional levels by providing a biodiverse range of crops. Once you start doing monocrops, you're talking about the degradation of the soil. You're talking about unequal access to different food products. And then, you know, when you start talking about the degradation of land, like the quality of soil and all of those things has such a detriment to the land and its nutritional quality and its sustainability for the future. And I think, you know, it ties into other forms of food activism, food sovereignty activism we've been seeing in India. A famous name is Vandana Shiva, who's been doing a lot of seed activism. And, you know, what's to say that the government now is not going to further impose themselves in terms of, you know, who gets to even produce the seeds that allow them to grow the food they need? So I think, you know, taking a systems approach to this, with a focus on climate change, we really do see further degradation of India's environment.
In a separate interview with Jody Kobarinski, member of the Waterloo Regional Food Systems Roundtable, I spoke more closely about the local connections and implications on our regional food system. Jody will provide an introduction to their entry point into this, and we'll get into the local context.
My work builds on over 20 years of advocacy and activism in food systems transformation work, which has involved spending time in India over a number of years. I have a direct connection to the work that's being raised here in Canada by farmers, but also with the farmers in India themselves, because I've met these folks, and I've walked on their farms, and I've eaten their food, and I understand what's at stake. So I bring both a personal angle as well as my research background on food systems to bear on this conversation.
And that really brings us to the connections between this labor movement, this fight for farmers' rights, to the local economy as well here in Kitchener-Waterloo. So the Waterloo regional food system is a growing part of the local economy, is often talked about in tourism and in a local way and in a regional way as well. Can you start to speak to why this issue is relevant to the local community here, even if it feels far from home?
There is no discrete economy any longer. We're going to see this increased corporatism and globalization over food systems. And India, a young democracy with a thriving agrarian culture, has an opportunity to do what the International Panel of Experts on Food Systems, the IPES Food, in 2016, they released an incredible report called From Uniformity to Diversity. And they're arguing for an agroecological approach to food systems, which, you know, India is the birthplace of this model of food system. And so you have the localized knowledge and the indigenous knowledge within India to feed the 1.3 billion people who live in that country without relying on exports, but keeping a green economy, you know, the potential to do this in a way that moves from a strife-based system to an abundance-based system. And instead, what we're seeing is this privatization. It matters to Canadians in three ways. One, it matters because a lot of this work is being done in our name. It benefits companies that have gotten rich in Canada or are centered in Canada. it benefits Canadian exporters, our pulse export markets. If the local farm community is destroyed in India, it's more market for the pulse sector in Canada. And we can't possibly stand here and benefit from these rules, which will throw literally tens of millions of people into abject poverty or starvation. And then the third piece, of course, is that this is just an extension of the neoliberal program begun in earnest under Stephen Harper. And because Canada is chasing free trade with India, you know, standing by while this happens is just not acceptable. Luckily, it didn't go widely reported, but Canada did stand up when the strike happened and made a very unsubstantial but poignant nonetheless comment on the international stage that the Indian farmers in a democracy have a right to be heard, and that the water cannons and tear gas that was being unleashed on 70-year-old farmers was probably, you know, a human rights abuse of some sort. I don't believe we use that strong of language, but Trudeau was sanctioned in India and Modi went on the offensive after Trudeau made the comments, which he doubled down on again. And so from a human rights perspective, Canadians that purport to be democracy loving and seek social and ecological justice for others and not just for ourselves at home should be up in arms about what's happening in India right now. It's basically the front line for are we going to see, as has been predicted, that Vanguard and BlackRock and the billionaire class by 2028 will basically own the means of all production. And this basically desocialization of agriculture and privatization of agriculture in India is one of the final battlegrounds, for lack of other imagery.
And so on some of the media that's been reported on this, the phrase farmers' rights or everyone's rights is being associated with this movement. So can you contextualize this and expand on its implication for our local community?
I think the two words that come to mind when I think of farmers' rights are autonomy and sovereignty. So autonomy over yourself, your land, your crops, your decisions, your customers, you know, access to infrastructure, supports. And when we say sovereignty, you know, we're talking about farmers' freedoms to decide on what they grow and how they do it, and how they engage their communities to obtain a livelihood for themselves.
One of the challenges of over kind of dominance by corporations is that the food system chain, like our access to food and the ways we get it, it becomes, further along, like we feel more disconnected the more corporate interests there are in our food system. The idea of farm to table is what we should be striving for, right? The direct connection to understanding where our food comes from, how it's grown, the lands that it comes from, and being able to know that being able to know that information and have access to that allows us to better understand, the environmental impact that we have. But this is not just up to the individual, right? And I think that's where everyone's rights kind of comes in. It's that, you know, if it was up to the individual, we could fix everything, but it's not. It's a system. And this is where the government has to make better choices. And that's for every government around the world, you know. It's really important that we set up these types of understandings and not maximize our corporate interests in our food chain. That's actually only furthering the problem. So the idea that it's everyone's rights to good food, I don't know, it's not a new argument, you know.
One of the things people need to know is that a lot of our food in Canada is produced by relatives of the farmers in India. And that's true in the Waterloo region, as it is across British Columbia, as it is through the Niagara region and all parts of Canada. This is a long-standing and proud tradition of agriculture. And to treat these farmers who are skilled, who are really stewards of our water, soil, and our plant and air resources so disposably is just, it's despicable. But the implications come from having even fewer opportunities to create the kind of food system that we know will really be sustaining. To keep the seed security and diversity up that we require, we need farmers working at 2 acres at a time. The level of stewardship that we provided. As a country that's looked to in the world to quote-unquote help when things get difficult, if we just think about the food security that will be lost if 60% of India's economy just evaporates over the next few years to the whim of the market, which hasn't proven to be very kind to farmers elsewhere. Those of us who've benefited most and profited most from this colonial model of extractivism, which is our full bellies here in Canada, we really need to think about the implications of allowing this level of industrialization to happen on our watch. And this isn't about maintaining a level of poverty or inaccess for village communities and rural communities in India, but about raising the profile of and importance of farmers and the knowledge they keep and the work they do to that of physicians, because both are 100% required for us to have community health. So, you know, there's so many entrance points for people. You know, if you just think about some of your favorite foods, if you eat rice at all, this should concern you directly. In a, you know, if you consume any spices, you know, you might be concerned that the birthplace of these foods is about to industrialize its farming at a rate that will make our heads spin.
And I also understand that you sit with the Waterloo Region Food Systems Roundtable, and there is a Waterloo Region Food Charter. So can you maybe speak to this food charter a little bit and how on a local level some of the principles of the food charter can be activated and work in solidarity with farmers?
Underlying the principles in the charter is the notion that we in the Waterloo Region do not achieve food security if we do so at the expense of others' food security elsewhere, particularly those who produce our food. So more simply put, I can't pretend to honor a charter if I follow all of the bits of it, but I only apply that to my region. Recognizing that we as a region will continue to bring food in from elsewhere, we need to be concerned with the well-being of the people who produce our food elsewhere, as well as the conditions of the ecosystems where our food is produced. Farmers deserve to earn a living for providing the rest of us with food. That applies not only to farmers here in Waterloo Region, but farmers that are providing our food that's being imported. We look to India as a model for the kind of food security we'd like to see in this region. I would love to see that the Food Systems Roundtable were able to work with our decision makers and create the kind of guaranteed pricing structures that are currently, or up until a few weeks ago, were available to farmers in India. I mean, what an incredible model. It starts to move toward food commons. And so, you know, India looked like it was doing some of the things correctly. If we want to move from a fully capitalistic model where, you know, we're perfectly comfortable with some people going hungry, to a model of mutual care. And so what's being lost in India is lost possibility and examples of the kinds of food security policy that would really benefit our region. We no longer have that to point to, and I think that's a huge loss for us as well.
In speaking with Sabine and Asha, they brought up moments that reminded them that this movement is not so far from home, but very anchored in the lived experiences of those who live alongside us in the Waterloo region. They speak to the importance of this relationality of global and local, and Jody shares some calls to action for us in the Waterloo region.
The other day, I took an Uber, and the driver was a Sikh Punjabi student, and We were talking about the protest, and very quickly they brought their phone out and showed me their Instagram and how they've been engaging the farmer protests in India from their own personal Instagram account. And I think that's really telling of the idea that people here in the community are feeling the vibrations of the protests. And that feeling here is very strong. He also went on to let me know that, you know, because of COVID-19 here, people are a little hesitant to come out and protest, but there have been some local gatherings with signage and things like that in support of the farmers in India. And it's because they recognize, you know, the impact that this is having in their homeland, but also the families that live here. So there is that, you know, local global connection in the movement itself. You know, we're seeing protests across the country, Vancouver, Brampton, Toronto, in big numbers. It's really telling that, you know, there is a community response here.
As somebody as well who really appreciates the importance of a local food system and the fact that, yes, we are all connected to the food system, although here in especially North America, it's very easy to believe and trick yourself into believing that you are not a part of mm-hmm. the food system because in your eyes, you don't participate in it. Mm-hmm. But the truth is you do, right? You know, three times a day, every time you have a meal, mm-hmm. you're thanking a farmer for that meal. I think if we're looking at kind of the local view of this, when we not only by supporting farmers who are participating directly in this protest in Punjab, definitely is one part of it. But I think an ongoing kind of action that we should take from this is that not only supporting farmers when they are, you know, so deeply struggling that they feel compelled to participate in protests and you know, that lead them to these actions, but supporting our local farmers who are doing well and who have those opportunities, because supporting your local food system is in turn supporting your global food system.
For folks who are listening, is there any sort of call to action that you would like to share?
In the spirit of the Waterloo Region Food Charter, we want to see the democratization of our food system, not the privatization of it. And so writing letters of support to Justin Trudeau for the stance we've taken on the international stage in support of a democratized food system, writing our mainstream media and calling them out for not covering this from a farmer's perspective. And I think that Canadians need to consider whether it's time for us to uptake with the youth every Friday who are out on climate strike right now and join those youth every Friday in every facet of Canadian life and go on climate strike and do so in the name of the Indian farmers and demand an end to the privatization that destroys the planet. We don't even have to come up with a new movement. We can literally just join teenagers and grade school children at lunch on Friday for an hour every week and in protest. The other thing we can do is we can write Loblaw Corporation and we can ask what they are doing in support of Indian farmers to maintain their system so that we know Loblaw and our food companies that feed us here in Canada aren't taking advantage of this moment to increase their profits while Indian farmers starve. And so I would ask people to write Loblaw and your local grocer and ask them, how are they guaranteeing that they're not going to profiteer from the destruction of food security in India? And what's their policy on dealing with the Indian government based on the rejection, the wide-scale rejection of the Indian public of these new rules? The other last thing I'm going to suggest folks can do is go online, find out about these strikes. You can check out the Indian press, you can check out CBC, but you can also listen to CKMS, other independent media. People can go to the Navdanya.org website and find out what's being organized by that movement. but there are other movements within India and within Via Campesina to find out how we can use our voice and our purchasing power to stand up to this kind of neoliberalization. At the end of the day, it's going to involve us doing more, though, than shopping and writing letters. We ourselves are going to have to heed this call to stand up, withdraw our own support for and participation in the neoliberalism that's leading to this kind of destruction. And folks are going to have to search their souls to find out what that means for them. If you are not informed and this is not your area of expertise, it would appear on the outside like what's happening is Modi is dragging agrarian economy into the modern world and getting rid of unfair tariffs and subsidies for that are preventing farmers from really stepping up and innovating and all of this sort of language. And I think it's really important that people understand that Indian farmers are competing against American and Canadian subsidies that show up at various points in the food system, from seed development and ag chemical development to guaranteed purchase prices on soy and corn in the U.S. that are hidden in farm subsidy language within the farm bill. But that the American farmer is one of the most subsidized farmers in the world, but they're subsidized to compete internationally against other farmers. Whereas in India, what appears to be a subsidy is to protect the capacity for India to produce food for itself. And one has to ask oneself, what is it we give up when we give up autonomy over our own food production? That's dystopian. It's not progress.
You've been listening to CKMS News in conversation with community members Asha Vridhi, Zabin Kamisa, and Jody Kobanerski. They've been speaking on the 2020 Indian farmers' protests and their connection to the Waterloo region. You can check out the archived versions of this program and other episodes on radiowaterloo.ca/news and follow us on Twitter at Radio Waterloo. You can email news@radiowaterloo.ca to get in touch with comments or ideas about stories to cover.